Hello there. Welcome to the Chat About Bot project, a series of conversations with many experts from the bot world. My name is Caio Calado, and today I'm having a conversation with Joey Toscano, author and founder of Design Good. We're going to talk about his upcoming book, Automating Humanity, Design, and some other really interesting topics like AI and automation and ethics. We're going to get to that right after this message.
Hi, my name is Sergio Passos. I'm CTO at Take. We are the leading Brazilian company for conversational apps and chatbots. Being the mobile market for more than 19 years has given us the expertise to build great conversational experience. To do so, we use Blip, our platform that integrates the best tools to build, run, and evolve chatbots. We believe that a single message can change the world, and that's why we think it is so relevant to chat about bots.
Hello, everybody. Today, I'm here with Joe. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
And before we start, I would just like to chat a little bit. You're in Brazil, right?
Right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were you doing here?
Oh, man. Well, seeing everyone down here, number one, but also coming down for a conference we have with Bots for You. So that was really exciting, really fun. Great attendance and really beautiful people in the crowd, so it was awesome to talk to everyone.
And you gave a presentation there, right?
I did.
What
I did.
Was it about?
It was about chatbots, conversation design, and the future, where it's all headed.
Oh, nice. And well, today the conversation is about bots, and we have many things to talk about it. But before we get to that point, I would like to get to know a little bit more about you and how you get into the bot world.
Yeah. So I've been working with the practice of automation and artificial intelligence since I was in college. I did a lot of research in psychology, so I got a lot of that kind of education in how to make things think, you know. I learned a different perspective, not just engineering. I learned it from a very human base. But from there, I got into design, I got into code, and I started to put them together and build a system of thinking pieces, you know. At first, you know, when I was younger, it was just theoretical. It wasn't applied work. But over time, I started to build real things, and they came to life. And I started to see some success in my career because of that. So I moved very quickly, I think, through the workforce, out to Colorado from Nebraska, and then out to California from Colorado. That's where I was consulting for Google out there. So it was a really good opportunity to work with artificial intelligence, not only with Google, but within RGA as well. So I've worked on several artificial intelligence projects, things you may or may not have heard of. And it's been a really interesting journey.
And through this journey, you probably got to know a lot of people and lots of different definitions of bots.
Yeah.
If you have your definition of bots, what would that be?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think my definition is much broader, much wider than a lot of people's. I consider a bot to be any form of artificial intelligence. It doesn't have to be a chat bot in a messenger platform. It doesn't have to be a robot in a machine. It is a intelligent system that can take an input and create an output after processing the data. I think the baseline of intelligence is the ability to consume, use, and store information, which is very broad, but that's what intelligence really is. That's the fundamentals of it. And artificial intelligence is just an artificial form of that.
And how can we design those things? Like, I mean, your definition is kind of really broad. But I think that we can use AI in different scenarios and for different things.
Sure.
But in the end of the day, I feel like the design is really important to build those things. So how can we use design to create a better AI or a better bot?
Well, I think it's important to realize that everything is designed.
Yes.
Whether it is designed or not, it is designed, right? So I guess more of the statement should be maybe along the lines of what kind of issues do we need to consider when we are designing these things, right? I think beyond where we are now, there's a lot of great engineered bots, right? A lot of systems that have very technical capabilities. But what we need to start shifting to is more humanitarian issues. We need to start working on making these systems humane and treating people right through them, not just creating artificial intelligence and automation because we can. Because right now things are moving very fast, and if it moves too fast, it can become dangerous. You know, so I think there's a point where design, right, as it is in a bigger picture, needs to take into consideration all the humanitarian aspects of things.
What do you mean by, like, make those things more humane? Like, more ethical, more human-like, or more connected to the human experiences? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I don't necessarily mean more human. Definitely not. I don't think that creating a system that's more human is better all the time, actually. There are a lot of things that we do as humans that are really dumb and that we don't want to put into a machine. But humane in the sense that we can trust the machine. It's not going to abuse us. It's not going to take advantage of us, manipulate us, or do things that are going to harm us. Yeah, I think that's very important. And right now, because there is so much unknown about what's happening, there is a lot of those bad behaviors happening.
Yes.
You know? It's hard to see if you don't know what you're looking for. You know, and I do think that's important that we as an industry clean that up. Otherwise, I think we will get in trouble by the people who are using our products. I think they will push back, and it won't be good for our business. So it's better that we get ahead of the curve and that we do it ourselves.
Yeah, I feel like we are getting to the point to talk about your book, but I would like to walk through some other things on bots before we get to that point. Because it is really important to talk about that ethical part and make people understand what they're like dealing with and how they can make like better products and better for the humane part itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is it so hard to create like a good bot in a sense of being like ethical and also good for business? Because I mean, sometimes people think that good for business is the same of like taking data or other stuff, but that doesn't mean like that needs to be like that all the time.
Mm-hmm. I think the challenge is taking these issues and putting financial numbers to them, you know.
I think, but what do you mean financial numbers? Like return of investments, are you talking
return
about?
On investment? Yeah. It's hard to say how much someone's experience costs,
yes,
right? I think we're starting to get to the point where we have those numbers. Like, for example, in terms of privacy and data collection, if you were to figure out how many hours it takes people to read all the terms and service agreements that they have to in order to understand what we're collecting and using, it would take an average American 10 days. That's insane. You're not going to spend 10 days of your year reading terms and service agreements. That should be our job as the technical people to figure that out, right? To make that easy for them, to make it easy for them to understand what we are taking from them and how it's being used. That cost, at the end of the day, is millions of dollars to people, right? If you take the whole population of the United States times 10 days, that's millions of dollars. So it's things like that, that we're just starting now to get the financial returns put to humane issues. And it's not easy, but I do think we're getting there. That's a big part of what I'm trying to do with my book, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about conversational copy design. Mm-hmm. How do we do that?
Yeah, well, I think it's a new field for a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah, at least the way it's been branded, but it's not really a new field.
Yes.
Right? We have a lot of people that went to school in the States for English, down here for Portuguese. We learn it in school, how to read and write. Most of us don't ever perfect it in school. And now that we have conversation as an interface, we're more interested in relearning it again, which is really interesting to me, actually. But I think that this is more of an opportunity for copywriters and for people who enjoy writing or do that as a living than it is an opportunity for visual designers to switch careers. I don't think that's a good transition. I think that there are people with more experience, and we should allow them to flourish, allow them to be part of the creative process, and bring in more members of the team, not just go out and find somebody who thinks they can do it because they think they can.
Do you have a step-by-step onto design? You wrote about that.
Yeah. I think it's very similar to the process that we use with regular design, right? You're gonna wanna create a baseline persona. That's a very basic step that's going to carry through into this new era of design. The difference is that a persona in visual design or any other kind of system may be something that we set as a foundation for the team. Might be something that we help clients understand what we're doing. But a persona with conversation design is much more than that. You're going to be talking about the person's pitch, speed, range, and tone of their voice, the different attributes that allows us to understand what defines the voice. You may have quotes on how they speak. You might have different experiences and say, while this person is running to the gym, they sound like this. While they are talking to their family, they sound like that. So things, yeah, like that. There's definitely a little bit of difference there with the persona, a little bit more information. From there, though, it's, again, wireframes translate to writing scripts.
And very conversations.
Similar. Conversations, scripts, yeah. And you don't have to be perfect, right? That's where the wireframe idea comes in, right? If we're going to try to transfer those from one art to the other, scripts at first don't need to be perfect. It's better to just write everything that you're thinking. Pick one thread of conversation, one topic, and follow that along until the end of the topic, and then switch. And do that for all of the challenges that you're trying to get through. Then what do we do next in design? We make a prototype. So for conversation, we might start to clean up some of the writing, right? Yes. High fidelity writing in this sense.
Or maybe have like a high fidelity conversation.
Yes.
And have a conversation about your script.
Right, yeah. Something I like to do a lot is make cards, right? Note cards. Take them and put on one side, put the bot's responses, and one side, put your responses. And then you can just play cards with people. You can hand back and forth and act like it's happening. It's much faster than trying to engineer the system. It's much faster than trying to work with any kind of template or prototyping tool. And it will save your business a lot of money in the long term. Yeah. And then after that, right, once you've tested it, then you can start to engineer it. Then you get to the build part, just like we do with regular design, right? And at that point, the challenge is part in building it. It is challenging to build these systems. It gets very messy. Because language is messy. It's not logical. It doesn't flow straight. It does a lot of weird things. But even more difficult than building it is maintaining it. You know, with a software, like an application that's a GUI interface, we can push updates every 3 to 6 months, maybe once a year if we do it well. You know, but with a conversational interface, you're going to be pushing updates regularly. Every day if you really do it right, if you have the bot. Essentially, you want to create a bot that will learn by itself. Because if you're sitting in there trying to program the whole thing, it's going to take you years to get it done.
Yes. And maybe you never have done.
Exactly.
It's going to be forever.
More than likely it will. Yeah, even if you train it. I mean, it's always going to be learning things. Language is infinitely large. So,
and also evolves with time.
Yeah, so it will never be perfect, and that's something that you just have to get used to, something that your company has to be okay with. It's going to take a lot of work, and it's going to be a lot of work for the rest of the time that it's around.
So let's talk a little bit more about your book. One day you decided to write a book. How was it? I know that this...
Yeah.
What? This is a broad question.
No, it was the hardest thing in the world.
Really?
Writing a book was super hard.
Why?
imagine designing a conversation, right? And how many iterations you go through that. Writing a book is really, really, it's really tough. You have to write, okay, imagine writing a blog post, right? What do you do when you write a blog post? You tell people what you're going to say, you say it, and then you tell them what you said, right? That's the general format of a blog. In a book, you have to do that in each chapter, right? And then the entire book has to do that as well. So it's very difficult to set that up for a lot of different writing, right? I probably wrote 800 to 1,000 pages of text, and then it got condensed down into 120. That was a lot of work that people will never see, yes. But hopefully makes it a lot more enjoyable, you know? So I guess, yeah, it's... I would say it's one of the greatest achievements I've had in my entire life, for sure. It's very, very difficult.
Why did you start to write it? This, I mean, I know you personally.
Yeah.
This is your kind of second book. You started to write one, and then you pivot to another one.
Yeah.
Why did you want to create the first one, and what changed you, changed your mind to go to the second one?
Yeah, so I started to write a book because I was writing a lot on Medium, right? That's how we connected. And I thought that we needed to have bigger conversations, you know? And it's difficult to have a bigger conversation on a platform like Medium or Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. And so I decided I'll just write a small ebook, you know, 50, 60, 70 pages.
About
chatbots at the time, yeah. Because I saw the ethical concerns I had with chatbots from inside the industry, and I wanted to talk about that, and I wanted to have, like I said, a bigger conversation. So I wrote that book about 3 months is what it took me. But after I got done with it, I looked at it, and I just wasn't satisfied. I just thought there's a lot more that I wanted to say. I thought it could make it, I could make it a lot better, more actionable for people, things like that. And so I tested it on people. I sent it to about 60 different people around the globe, everything from technical expert all the way down to student. And I got a lot of great feedback, mostly that people are interested in it, and then where they thought it could be improved, you know. So I worked on that, and that was the second iteration. Is I had a book by 6 months later that was much higher quality, had been tested, user tested, right, just like we do as designers, on people across the world. So I checked across language barriers, cultural differences, education differences, technical experience, things like that.
And by this time was only about chatbots and
ethics. It was kind of, it was a three-part book. So the first part was more the history of computing and why chat is the future. Conversation design is the future. The second part was how to design for conversations. You know, where do you need to take advantage of the system? How can you create the best system, et cetera, et cetera. And then the third part was the ethical concerns. So what you need to be aware of, how this may impact people, and why we need to start working, doing better things as the people building these systems. But yeah, then it evolved again. And that was because as I was traveling, I traveled several different states, countries, giving talks about this. And mostly what people asked me about were the ethics. A lot of people, you know, they saw what I was talking about, and they said, you know, what you're saying is really good, it's awesome, but it's like 5 to 10 years out for my business. And I'm more concerned about the ethical problems that are happening in Silicon Valley. Can you please tell me more? Because I'm concerned about that. And that really was, that's what I wanted to talk about, but also it was what I was nervous to talk about.
Why?
Why? Because it's not easy to talk about some of that stuff when you're working out in Silicon Valley. It can be a really, I don't want to say awkward conversation, but it can be very intense.
Yes.
And so I avoided that for a bit. But having seen all the concern from people as I traveled, I was like, you know, I don't really care anymore. I think that it's time for this kind of conversation. I think that we need to talk about this, and I think we need to help people bridge that gap. So the book changed again. I took the beginning and the ends of that first book and I put it into one, and I made it more focused. I expanded on topics. I put money to the issues at hand, not just telling stories, so that anyone who reads it has language to sell to their company, to make ethical design, and to drive business, which is key.
The name is Automation Humanity, right?
Automating Humanity,
yes. And you're saying that software and algorithms is getting to the place that's just like automating us.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of message you would like to, or thoughts you would like to bring to people besides the ethical parts? You're writing, I mean, your book,
yeah.
I have saw some like chapters, and it is really interesting because like there are so many things that are just there, but it's kind of like we do not see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like we need someone to just like hey, you see that? Look that again. Yeah. Like, yeah. In this way.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm trying to do, right? I think you get a different perspective when you're inside of these companies than you do when you're outside. And so that's what I'm trying to give people, is the business perspective. There's a lot of things people don't see. I think some of my bigger concerns, though, is that we are not binary creatures, right? I think there is a lot of potential for artificial intelligence to help us as the human species. I love it. I want it to succeed. But I also think there's a line that we should not cross. And that comes in, for example, like proxy data, approximate data values. Like, for example, there is no equation for love. There is no equation for sadness. There is no equation for a lot of the things we experience in life. If there were, we should theoretically be able to always achieve that.
Improve it.
To improve it, to always be happy and always get happier, or to never be sad and get less sad. We can't. We just can't. And there are things in that same sense that we shouldn't be automating, but we're attempting to. And those are some of my fears. I think there's a lot of great potential for artificial intelligence, but it's not in those kind of business models. Yeah.
And if you have one thing to say about a book that makes sense for you, but it doesn't make sense for others, what would that be?
That's big. I think probably one of the moments that's going to really blow your mind, I think, when you're reading the book, is how I've made a metaphor for the attention economy, in the sense that it's not so different than money laundering, what's happening right now with data. You have to consider that in the attention economy, right, we're using attention as money. No longer are we paying money for a lot of these services. But in that sense, right, a lot of these companies are actively pushing the price as high as possible. Right? And what does that mean? Well, so if you create an addictive system that is meant to drive engagement, to raise engagement, you are price gouging in the attention economy, because you're trying to get as much attention as possible, or as much money as possible. If we were doing that in real life, if I say I was selling kids' toys and some kid went out and bought it for $5, and the next day I sold it for $10, next day I sold it for $20, and it just kept going higher and higher, people would go crazy, right? But for some reason, in this new economy, we're unable to see this trouble. And what it's doing to us is it's damaging us psychologically. It's causing a lot of depression by getting people addicted to devices. It's causing physical pain by postural deformities from looking down at our screen, sitting at our desks all the time.
Making people sleepless and feeling lonely.
So I think that's going to be a really interesting part. I'm not going to go into the full depths of it here, but there's a lot of different ideas in there that probably have not been thought of before. You may have crossed your mind. You probably know what I'm talking about, but maybe haven't thought of it the way that I'm going to say it, that, you know. So
I wonder if you have any advice that you can give to yourself a year ago, after all the things that you've done, study and written. It was a lot, especially in the past 3-4 months.
Yeah.
You have, if you could go back a year, find yourself, say hey Joe, what's up?
I think from a human perspective, living life thing, I would tell myself to take better care of myself, because it's very difficult to do when you're on the road.
Yes.
And I've been on the road for 14 months now, almost nonstop.
How many cities have you visited in states?
I don't know the number of cities actually, but 19 different states or nations across 3 continents. It will be 4 continents in a month and a half. So a lot of the world. You know, and it's been great. I've met tons of incredible people. I've had a lot of great connections, and I'm blessed to be in the position I'm in. But it's very difficult to take care of yourself, and I would say, I would focus on that. And I think that's something we can all learn. You know, we all take advantage of our youth. We all take advantage of our stability in our lives. But I think it's good for all of us to take time to take care of ourselves as well. Even if we have that stability and that youth and whatever else we have, it's good to get ready for the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And your book is kind of the future as well, right? Mm-hmm. You're kind of like creating like a foundation for the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What are the future that you want to have in a few years?
Yeah. Well, the foundation, what I'm trying to set right now, like you said, is for my new nonprofit called designgood.tech. I chose that name because it can extend to a lot. You can talk about designing good environments with technology. You could talk about designing good workplaces with technology, designing good schools, whatever that may be. And my foundation right now is setting that ethical framework, but I hope to find a lot of people who want to do that as well. You know, I can't do this alone. This is going to take all of us. And I want to help amplify the voices that want to do this. You know, I'm trying to leverage my opportunities to give others more opportunities and to expand this quicker, because we need to see change in the next few years very quickly. And it's going to take all of us to make that change, not just me. So I hope to use it as a platform for all of us as designers to have a better voice.
And create like a better future.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think this is all. And thank you so much for this conversation. It was nice. I'm really excited for your book. It's coming, right?
It's coming. Coming in October.
October,
already on Amazon. So if you want to check it out, it's Automating Humanity. Joe Toscano is my name. If you put it on Amazon, it'll come up. So, or check out designgood.tech, and you can find everything there.
All right. I feel like, do you have any final message for the audience or anything that you'd like to say?
I don't know. That was a good conversation we had there. So I think we covered a lot. But just, I challenge everyone all the time when I go places, when I give talks, to create the future that we want to make, you know. It's easy to get in the middle of business and to just go with the flow and to say yes to everything because it's easier. But I challenge everyone to just fight for the future that we want to be a part of, you know, not one that is controlled by ruthless automation, which is kind of where we're headed right now. So it's not easy, but we can do it. We can really do it.
Yeah. Check his book.
No.
All right.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Hey, you made it to the end. Congratulations. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really, really hope that you like it and also that you learned it a lot. If you have any questions about the topic that we discussed, please write us a comment. And also find us on Twitter. Just look for @chataboutbot. I hope to see you next week with a new guest, where we are going to chat about bots.